All right, this is Randy Vaughn. This session is called The Best Social Media Tools. And as we're going through this, I always like to use the hashtag. If you're on Twitter, Instagram, Facebook, using the hashtag RWPC is just a way for all of us to connect. I've followed some new people, connected with some new folks, whether on Twitter or Facebook particularly. And that's just a way we can share ideas, share what you're learning, connecting each other together. So use that hashtag. My Twitter handle's on there if you want to follow me on Twitter. I do a post on Facebook. I'll give you that link at the end. I do at least once or twice a day sometimes on Facebook, just some sort of article, some sort of link, or something that'll help you market your school. On Twitter, I do often do quite a bit more. So you might, if you want a little bit more information, you might follow me on Twitter. I try to connect with different people as well, send out more links or retweet other articles. You'll get more stuff there. That's our website there. I'll tell you a little bit more at the end what you can do with that. Let me connect my... whenever I present, I always like to give people a little bit idea of who I am. This is the family. This is my wife, Kelly. She and I have been married 20 years this December. And so my dog, Tori, is there in the middle. She's in high school. Two guys on the ends, Timothy on the right side, Jonathan on the left. They are 2 years apart, but they look about the same age and the same height. But Jonathan's quite a tall kid. And then Katie is there at the bottom. And I want to tell a little bit about her story because people always ask where we adopted her from. And this is where we adopted her from. I can get it together. Benin, West Africa is a place that we lived in for 9 years. Before I was doing this, I was actually doing church planting work and missionary work, leadership training with pastors and ministers and evangelists. And so that's kind of what I did for about 10 years of my life. And this is a village very similar to what Katie grew up in, or her family grew up in. When Katie was born, her mother and father were really, really good friends of ours. And her birth father is crippled with polio, and so he has very little use of arms or legs. And so he really couldn't take care of their kids. Katie was born, and about 3 days after the C-section, which is uncommon there in this very poor developing part of Africa, her mother passed away from complications of that. And so her birth father asked us to raise Katie, and so that's what we've done since she was 3 weeks old, so we've had her. But this is kind of the area she grew up in. So I'm at my little clicker. I'll do it this way. I go back every couple of years to visit. These are some of the preachers and the pastors that I work with there. I'll be going back in September to visit them. Let me get this set up. Okay, that's just a little bit about me, so you know a little bit more than I'm just a marketing presenter. So we're going to talk about the best social media tools. And here's the way we're going to break this down today. We're going to talk about tools, but we're also going to talk a little bit about a couple of other things, because I think it's really important to understand social media in this light. You really need to understand strategy, and that's really what I cover more in depth in the session called The 6 Key Elements to Effective Social Media. I really go into the strategy part of things. We'll do a little bit of review to that today, but I go in much greater detail, and I think I have 2 or 3 classes on that later today, so you should be able to pick up one of those if you'd like. We're going to talk a lot about tools today. And then you have to have the tools, you have to have the devices and tools to implement this social media too. And I'll show you how we're going to cover that today. We won't have time to go through all of that. So we're going to talk a little bit about strategy first. And again, this is kind of an overview. Now, and if you've been in any of the classes, I go through the same definition in every class because I think it's important. I think everybody needs, we need to understand when we're marketing a school, what does that mean? Marketing, if I was to poll you to say, are you in favor? Do you like the word marketing? Do you like marketing in general? Surprisingly, a lot of people, not really big fans of marketing. Why? Because as a consumer, we've been marketed to, and usually in ways, pushy, manipulative. We don't like that. We don't like to be treated that way. And so when I visit with schools and we talk about marketing, I can always sense a little bit of resistance. Like, one, I don't really want to come across that way. I don't want to be that guy, that girl that markets that way. I don't want to be manipulative. I don't want to be pushy. And another way, you know, we don't want to, it's education, you know. But we all know the reality is there's a couple empty seats in your school. Those represent dollars, and those have to be filled in order for the school to be thriving and kept alive. And you all know of schools that if they don't fill enough seats, they have to shut their doors. So marketing is that reality. But we don't want to treat it just as a necessary evil that we have to do and then just turn around and do the same tactics to prospective families that we don't like done to us. So I just like to give people a definition of what is marketing. So we're going to go through these two, this definition. It's in two parts. This is the first part. It goes like this: getting ideal families to know, like, and trust you. So we could go through a lot of definition. I did an undergraduate degree in marketing, and I know for certain I had to memorize the definition of marketing for some exam somewhere. And I know that it was much longer than this, and it was much, matter of fact, I went through one time and found the archive of that textbook, looked up the definition, and it literally was a long run-on sentence of about 75 words. And it, because it was encompassing of all these things that in the end, no one really knew what it meant. And as I would share that with schools or businesses that I work with, they would all look at me like, I don't know what that means. So marketing needs to be something we can grasp, something we know what we're doing. And so this simple definition, I hope, will allow you to know what it is you're doing in marketing. So it's getting ideal families to know, like, and trust you. That's the first part. So you're identifying your ideal families, those families that would be a good match for you, they're mission appropriate, they share your values, they're able to pay, maybe full pay. If not, you know, they might get some financial aid, but we can't take in everybody at 100% scholarship. That would kill us. We can't do that. So there's some level of their ideal in many different ways. The best thing I can think of, if you look across your school and you think, man, if we had 10 more families like that family right there, then we'd be good. That to me is what I would consider an ideal family. That's one way you can look, because they pay well, they're good match for us, they share our values, and when they're out in the community, they represent us well. So that'd be an ideal family. There's a lot that we go into, when I work with clients one-on-one, we go through a month-long process of identifying 3 to 5 different segments of these ideal families so that you can then zero in and really target with your marketing, know how to communicate to those families. And so we go through that process. But for this purpose, it's just a broad definition of getting those ideal families to know, like, and trust you. Now this, as you can imagine, is somewhat just a relationship developing. You are nurturing that relationship. I liken it to dating. You know, if my wife and I started to get to know one another, we then got to like each other, and then eventually, over the period of time, we became to trust each other, and we got married. So there's a commitment level at that when there's trust. And I think at the end, when there's trust between you and a prospective family, they're going to enroll their kids in your school. At this stage, when they're just getting to know you, they're not ready to enroll yet. A lot of times as marketers, we think, oh, if they call up on the phone, then we need to start pushing, get everything out there to them because we got to get them to enroll. But in reality, sometimes they're way back. They're just getting to know you. They may be getting to know 3 or 4 other schools. They may be checking out homeschool with their friends and see if that's a viable option. Whatever it is, they're getting to know you. And even to the point where they're getting to kind of like you, they're following you on social media, maybe they've even come for a tour. They are fans of you, but they haven't yet committed to say, you're the best choice. Because I'm still looking at this other school. Maybe for whatever reason, I'm just not yet committed. But eventually we get to the point where they're trust, and they say, yes, I've surveyed the landscape, and for my little babies, you're the best fit. Okay, so we get them to enroll. But, as you know, enrollment can't really be the end game. I know we're measured by that, and your head of school will say, how many, you know, families do I have enrolled, and the board's going to be pressuring you, and you've got your own goals. How many people do we have enrolled? But I think, honestly, if we look at marketing, it cannot be the end game. Because this is what we're really after. We're trying to get those ideal families to know, like, and trust us so that they'll enroll. But eventually, what we're really trying to do is build loyal ambassadors for your school. That's what you're trying to do. If know, like, and trust ends in enrollment, that's kind of that recruiting process, the recruiting effort that we've got them now to enrollment. If you hear the word loyalty, in your context, in your school cycle of things, when is the word loyalty really come into play? What season of your school year does loyalty happen? Re-enrollment. All right? And we all know that it really takes a lot more money, certainly a lot more time, to recruit new families to fill that seat than it does to make sure these two families right here don't bail on us, unless they just have to move out of town or something. But we don't want these two to move, or we don't want them to drop out just because they're unsatisfied. So while we're desperately trying to fill those two seats, we can't wait. We can't just neglect these two, because we may fill those two seats and then realize we dropped a couple out of neglect, and we're net zero again. And so that's not successful. We don't need to do that. We need to be as intentional with loyalty development, retention efforts, as we are with recruiting efforts. And that's often overlooked. Everybody knows it's true. But every school I've worked with says, yeah, we don't really do a lot. As a matter of fact, even in new families. New families are the most prone to bail because of disillusionment. You have all those families who came over and said, oh, this private school is going to be much better than that public school, or this, if you're a Christian school, they're going to, everything's perfect at a Christian school because they're all Christians, right? And so my kid is going to be treated in the most Christ-like behavior, and no one will ever say anything to them. The teachers will love on them no matter what grades they make. You know, there's these realities in new families that we can't measure up to, and so there's disillusionment. If we fill these two seats with new families, and we say, okay, great, we got them enrolled. It took till August 15th, but we got them enrolled. Take a deep breath, and we forget about them, and then we start working on recruiting efforts, and we forget, and then come along January, we send them a letter and say, oh, it's time to re-enroll now. We've forgotten that in 6 months, there's been a lot of disillusionment. If we're not intentionally working on those two things in retention efforts, then I think we're going to miss out. So loyal ambassadors, that's just loyalty is more of an adjective to describe the ambassador. That's what you really want. You want a family who represents you well, talks about you well, shares with their friends. They will be your best ambassador on, when you need something on Facebook, they'll come to bat for you. They'll invite friends of theirs to an open house. They'll volunteer for things. They'll be your best ambassador in the community. That's what we're building. But a new family just coming in, that barely got to know you maybe 3 months earlier, maybe 6 months earlier, they're not going to immediately become an ambassador. Now, they may be on the road. Some of them maybe found what they were looking for, and they can quickly become that. But we've got to nurture loyalty, and we've got to nurture them to be a great ambassador. And so this is what I call the three R's of school marketing: recruiting, which is that first two lines, recruiting, and then retention and referrals. You've got to focus on those three things equally in your marketing. Marketing is not just about recruiting. It's got to be all three. So, you know, work on your strategies. I know one friend of mine that works in an independent school that says they meet I don't know if they take a half-day retreat, and they just talk about retention. And they say, what can we do this year to work on retention? And so you may want to look at that. I mean, some of you have good numbers in the 90%. Of retention, but maybe it's 92. Maybe we need to get it to 96, 97, maybe even higher. But if we're not intentional, that's probably not going to happen. So we need to work on that and work on referral strategies. What are some things that you can help, you know, give fuel for your ambassadors to be better at what they're doing? One tip on ambassadors, it's hard if you're trying to get word of mouth going, go straight to the ones who are already doing it, and give them more kind of more tools, more fuel, more stories, and they'll do it better than it is to try to take someone who's never said anything, they're quiet, they're reserved, they're not gonna, and try to make them to be an ambassador for you. They're just, that's not gonna happen. So it's gonna be a much harder process. So what you want to do is to nurture those. So loyal ambassadors is the phrase I want you to leave with. Anytime you're talking about marketing strategy, that's what we're after, is loyal ambassadors, okay? So this is how we want to think about this in strategy purposes. There's a couple of things. We're still on the strategy part. You have to know your audience. And that audience primarily are those ideal families. Particularly when we're recruiting those ideal families, we identify them. Like I said, when I work with clients one-on-one, we go through and identify, like this picture, kind of 3 to 5 different types of segmented audiences. So we may have, in some cases, I've had, we call them kindergarten mom. So little young mom, 20-something, got little babies at home, 3, 4 years old, and she's beginning to look at the, she's got them in pre-K somewhere maybe, and she's looking in her next path. Where's she going to go from here? Maybe middle school dad who is looking at his good athletic boy or girl and seeing down the road that if they have to play at the public school, and if you're in a large city, those public schools just get bigger and bigger as they go from middle school to high school. And he's thinking, there's no way, even though he's good, he's not the best. And I'm not trying to get him a scholarship anywhere. I'm just trying to get him an opportunity to play because I like to, and I want to see him play, and I think he's good enough. And so the big public school is just not an option. But I'm frustrated about it. If that's the path I'm on, I'm going to be frustrated. So I may be looking for something else. So whatever the persona is, you look at and identify your audiences. And then this is real important. You have to understand, as I've just kind of talked about, what are the needs, problems, pains, frustrations, and fears of those audiences. So as I mentioned, middle school dad's kind of frustrated by this path that he's on, that his, you know, son or daughter's on, thinking there's no way they're going to play. Or maybe she's already not made the volleyball team the last 2 years, and she's really good. And there's a volleyball team at your private school that we think she can make the team. You know, or whatever reason, maybe it's, again, kindergarten mom who's scared to death that she's going to mess up her kid's life if she doesn't put her little baby in the best kindergarten. You know? And you know those, you know, it happens. And they have irrational fears, but they're real. So we need to kind of talk their language. We need to understand where they're coming from. It may be middle school mom who has enjoyed the precious elementary teachers that love on their babies. Love on my babies. And they just hug them and, oh, they just are wonderful. And then they get to middle school, and what happened? The teachers are now mean, and my kid's getting bullied at school all of a sudden. And, you know, who are these friends my kids are hanging out? You know, those kind of, you know, these stories, they happen over and over and over. They're not, it's like, it's unique. I've worked with schools from Maryland to Colorado to all over, and everybody's got the same stories. It's really interesting to me to watch. Okay, and then we have to understand in the strategy side of things, why would they pick you? Maybe you're the only private school in town. Maybe that's, you know. But most likely, in nowadays, there's charter schools. Even a homeschool community can be a real strong competitor. Because people, if you know, they don't want to pay $10,000, $15,000, $8,000, whatever it is for school when they can form a homeschool community to do that. You know. And so you have to compete effectively across everybody. And I go through an exercise with our clients, and this is really extensive, but we go through and say, okay, how do you compete with the public school? We go through it, you know, line, and we do a lot of work on that. How do you compete with the charter schools? Is there any difference there? Okay. How do you compete with homeschool? How do you compete with other private schools? And so we go through every single one of those, because you have to be able to compete effectively so that that audience, middle school mom, kindergarten mom, is going to know real clearly why they would pick you. Okay? And then this is the biggest thing. You have to showcase evidence. One of the reasons we don't like marketing is because we've all been manipulated by some claim, some statement that a company made to us and says, if you'll buy this, you'll get this, if you'll feel this, this will make you do this, whatever, and we get it, and we ourselves have disillusionment because it didn't do what you said it was going to do. Evidence, evidence, evidence. You've got to showcase evidence that what you claim is happening at your school. What we like to do is put up billboards and brochures. Even if they're virtual online, we like to tell everybody what we do. Tell everybody about our different things. We bullet point websites to death, looking for somebody to say what we do. But the prospective families are saying, I see what you say you do, but now where's the evidence that that's happening? Where's the testimonials? Where's the case studies? Where's the some sort of content, video content? Is there a story on your website that shows me that you really are the best place for my child? So evidence, evidence, evidence is really key. So that's kind of the strategy piece of things. But let me kind of give you an idea of, in marketing, where we've come. This probably is very familiar. Some of you have been in this position for quite a while. To bring people into your school, what'd you do? Well, you sent out direct mail. If you could afford it, you did something like radio, TV. And you relied a lot on word of mouth. That was pretty much marketing for decades and decades for schools. That's how we got people into schools. We spent a lot of money, a lot of time developing that, magazine ads, whatever we could do to drive. And this was our toolbox here. And now we have something called, and you can, a lot of different names to it. I always just call it integrated marketing, where you have all these other little tools. And I'm going to go through this little diagram. You can see it better. But just to give you an idea, there's so much more now. And the reason I call it integration is it integrates with some of those, where all this online marketing stuff can actually integrate with your direct mail, even a magazine ad, and if you can afford it, some of the more mass media tools. And that's now, we've got all of this at our disposal now. We've got all this online marketing and all the traditional marketing to bring people into the school. But we need to understand these tools. So we're going to talk about these tools, what they are. And I just call it, for simple purposes, I just call it, this is what your online marketing system could consist of. And I have to say this up front. I made changes to this presentation this morning because I just thought, I don't think I've got it quite down yet. And I keep changing this presentation all the time. And I regret that, but at the same time, how can you keep this presentation the same? I looked at one I did back in 2013, and I thought, oh my gosh, that is like so old. There's no way that would be relevant today, you know? And so what I used to try to do is put every single thing on there and realize that some of them just drop off, some of them are new popping up, and so I've kind of tried to simplify it down, and even as I simplify it, I think, I don't know if I've covered it right, but here's how we're going to go through this. The main thing that we want to do in your online marketing system, when you select the kind of tools, the best tools for social media, is you have to understand the website is ultimately at the hub of everything you're doing on social media. There are going to be some cases where you are on something like, let's say, Instagram. How many of you use Instagram for your school in some way? Okay, just a few of you. But you know that other than the profile link that you have, when you post an image to, and it goes into the newsfeed of all the people that follow you, there's no way to click. You can tap that thing as much as you want, and all you're going to be getting is more, you know, you're not going to go anywhere. You can't go to the website. So there are going to be some moments where an Instagram, other than telling people to go back to the profile and click the image there, which is a little inconvenient. Most people are not going to do that, but sometimes they will. There's some standalone things like that. And in the visual content strategy presentation I do tomorrow morning, I talk about this a little bit more. Even something like Facebook doesn't always link back to your website. But for the most part, in general, what you want to be doing with any of these online marketing tools is to be driving people to the website. As you can imagine, we're going to walk through this, what I just kind of call it an online marketing wheel. There's a lot of different things that we're going to fill in on this wheel. And these are the kind of the spokes that go out. They kind of integrate together a little bit, but ultimately all of them kind of drive to the website. And I'm going to show you why that's important. Because if we understand this kind of graphic, at least this, I mean, you can modify it. And you may say he left off something, he missed this. Just get the concept. We're going to go through this. So, and not necessarily in any particular order, but I'll talk a little bit about what tools that I think are important. I think email marketing, in other words, kind of what I'm doing there, capturing email addresses of prospective families, or you can do it via text message if you want to. Most of the time, the text messages are going to be more for your internal families, and you may have a system where you can blast out a text to somebody, and that's fine. Email marketing is really good, and it depends on the system that you have, whatever you use. I'm not that familiar with the RenWeb component of this, but what you're particularly wanting to do, and this is a clarification I need to make, you probably do a lot of email out to your current families. I even mentioned to one school, and they put their hand up and said, no, we're done with email. We get too many emails already. But what they were talking about was the current families are getting too many emails because they're getting principal emails, they're getting teacher emails, they're getting coach emails, and then the school's sending them mass emails, and it's just too many emails. What I'm really focusing on here are the prospective families. Okay, you can certainly have internal, and that goes well with the retention efforts, and I'll kind of briefly kind of deviate a little bit on that one. Yes, you have to streamline your communication, your internal communication. I mean, you've got to do that somehow so that parents don't get bombarded, because the worst thing would happen is parents stop reading the emails because they just get tired of them. But don't forget the email, the internal emails. You've got to, and some of you do this with the newsletter or something, but don't forget to showcase the evidence. We talked about the evidence before. If there's a new family with a great new story, send that out to everybody, in addition to some of the other things going on. But don't forget to tell them about the new stories that are happening, because current families are just going about their business. They may not know. They may have all middle school and high school kids. Well, they need to hear some of those success stories down in the lower grades, because they've got friends who've got kids coming up in the lower grades. So they need to hear that. So email is a good way to send those stories out. But let's focus on the prospective families. You've got to... Really, you got to think about what we mentioned before, who your audience is and what their needs, problems, pains, frustrations, and fears are, and then showcase evidence. That's really kind of what you're doing. And so email marketing is something that you might use your own system. You might use something like MailChimp is another tool that a lot of people use because it's free, at least to a certain point. Constant Contact is another system. But what you're able to do with those systems is send out emails to people. They may have come for an open house. That's a common way you have emails. I talked to one school. I said, how many emails do we have of prospective families? Pulled out the drawer, and there was a stack of note cards. And I said, okay, what have we done with these? Nothing. But when they came through the open house for the last 2 years, they've name, email address, and they literally had them on a 4x6 card, and they stuck them in the drawer. Not very useful. If you're going to ask for an email address of somebody, you need to use it, okay? And here's another thing that I want to clarify. If someone comes to visit or an open house, yes, it's appropriate to send them an individual email and say, thank you for coming. You might want to do that. But what I'm also talking about is a long-term kind of consistent, periodic email that they get from the school, maybe once a month. Maybe twice a month if it's real valuable. If it's focused on their needs, problems, pains, frustrations, and fears, adding value, showcasing evidence, if it's useful like that, if it's just your upcoming events at the school, not so much. But if it'd be an email that they would find valuable and helpful when they open it up, your prospective families are going to read that, then send that out at least once a month, I think. And what that does is allow you to have, you're staying top of mind with those families throughout the year. So don't just wait till January, because you got an open house at the end of the month to blast out everybody and say, oh, by the way, we have another open house, and we'll see you next year when I send my next email out to you. That doesn't work. It's regular, consistent communication. Okay, so email marketing, all that is really important. You can also, another way to capture those email addresses is to offer something of value. A school, many of you follow Brendan Schneider, who's he has a website called SchneiderB.com, and he's a director of advancement at an independent school up in Pittsburgh area. Swickley Academy. One of the things he told me that they do real successfully is they offer a guide to choosing private schools. So I think it's 27 questions to ask when you're choosing a private school. They put this FAQ page together, basically, and put it out there, and they put it all over their website. So prospective families, And they put it all on social media too. And they put it out there. Prospective families sign up for this. They'll put their name and email address so that they can get this, because they need this guide. And obviously the guide is, here's some questions, here's what you need to be asking. Obviously, Swickley's going to write it in a way that is going to be showcasing some of their, you know, positive points, but it's just a general guide for parents. So that's another way that you can get email addresses of people who are interested in, at some level, maybe your school. They may be at that, when they're getting to know, like, and trust you, they may just be at the know stage, getting to know who these their options. And so that's a good way to do that. So that's one, I think, real critical component. I mentioned the blog is another one. You may have some sort of blog on your website. Some people call it the news or success stories, some way that you're able to document evidence. Your admissions pages, your athletic pages, your fine arts page, or what normally are considered static pages. They're not changing that much. And while that's good to have that information, and we need to be, when you're working in a social media system, we need articles that are going to drive traffic to your website. And new stories, new bits of evidence, put on a blog or some sort of news feature. This is, I mean, you can go through, you shouldn't have any trouble coming up with content with this, because you've got academic successes, athletic successes, arts successes. You've got a host of different things that you could put on a blog. But I think that's a real key component, because you're more traffic coming to your website. And when you're on social media, you need this content to push out there to your followers so that they can come to your website. I mentioned this in another presentation that your blog kind of acts as, you know, that time where you say, I'm just going to run into Walmart real quick, or whatever grocery store you want. I've got to get some milk. That's all I got to get. And I want to get the milk and go home. Okay, so you go, and those crazy marketing people at grocery stores decide, where's the milk? Well, isn't that interesting? It's at the back of every store. I wonder if they're thinking this intentionally or not. Of course they are, because you walk out with more than milk. You walk out with eggs because you realize, oh, I forgot, I needed that too. And then you realize this great new double-stuffed lemon cookie that would go great with that milk, you know. And you, whatever it is that you do, you see, and you come out with a basket full of stuff. The blog really acts in a similar kind of way. It acts as a magnet to draw people back to your, normally what would be a static website. And it draws people back. They read this article, they read this success story, or whatever it is. And then while they're there, they might download a guide that says 27 things to consider when choosing a private school. They may download that. Or they may look and say, well, now that I'm here, I guess I should just at least peek into what the tuition schedule is. And then they get to that schedule and they're kind of got a little sticker shock because they're used to free public school. And then, but they get there, and there's a video testimony of a family who made some adjustments in their life so that they could afford the school. And then she takes that home, you know, she makes a note, and when her husband gets home, they sit down and talk about it and say, I want you to watch this video. We've always said we couldn't afford that school, but look what this family did. We could do the same thing. And all of that started with a blog post driving people back to the school website. So that's why that's kind of important. Facebook. You know, for the most part, I would say Facebook is still very relevant, very relevant. There's some frustrations out there with Facebook. It changes a lot. We can't seem to get our Facebook posts in front of as many people as I used to. If you're an administrator of your Facebook page, how many of you are admins of your Facebook page? So you probably felt some of that frustration. You put something out and it says, you know, 100 people reached, and you're like, we have 1,000 people who like our page, but it doesn't seem to go there. And Facebook's just always modifying their algorithm to say who they just think that they know better than we do. They think they know who to distribute that information to. That's why on Facebook, one of the things I really stress is when you're training your parent-teacher organization at the beginning of school this year or with your new family orientation, stress the importance to them of liking and commenting and sharing on Facebook, because Facebook's algorithm still says if if you like and comment and share it, then you must think it's important and you must enjoy getting that, so we'll make sure that shows up. But if you never like it and comment and share it, then we're going to assume that's not something you're really interested in, so we're not going to show that. And they just decide what to show. There's a new feature, and I can't really explain it on because it's not. I don't have it on the screen, but there's a way, another way that you can do it where Facebook will allow you to now, I forgot the terminology, but you can actually tell the news feed, I always want to see something from my school. And you'll have to go in, and you might want to Google it or something. It's just recent, like in the last few weeks or month. But you can go into your... I'll try to find it, and if you follow me on Twitter or Facebook, I'll put it out there. But it's a setting where you can go in and click, and then you can say, I want to get that. I'll have to look that up and send that out. So, but you want to encourage families to do that. Make sure that your school stuff goes up in the news feed. If you're on the desktop version, you can tell parents to go click on where it says like. There's an actual drop-down menu, and it says you can get notifications. So what that happens, it's a further, not only does somebody like the Facebook page, but now if they get notifications, every time you post something, the little notification button shows up, and when they check their notifications, it'll say, your school posted something. So then they can click that. And that's another way to increase the reach of your post. Okay, I wish I could show you all that on the screen, because it might make more sense. But if you follow us on Facebook and Twitter, I'll try to send some links out that explain that better. But I think Facebook is just more and more something still really relevant. I'll mention here because, I'll save that just for a second. But Facebook is very important because it's still by far the most used platform. And again, some of the other classes I teach, I actually show you a little bit more what to post on Facebook. But generally, I think Facebook is a good tool. Twitter, I think, is a very good tool as well. You can automatically link, if you want to, your Facebook to your Twitter. So where anything you post on Facebook just goes to Twitter. I actually do that myself. Now, a lot of people are surprised by that because most people say, don't do that. But the reason I do it is, sometimes I post things on Facebook, and it's just easier for me sometimes just to let that kind of cross over and post over there. But I also go into Twitter and post a whole bunch more stuff, too. Yes?
How much do you use a site that manages it all, like whatever?
Hootsuite.
Hootsuite, I know the other day you said something. Did you do Facebook?
I do Facebook inside of Facebook. And you can do a lot of things with Hootsuite. Hootsuite's a great tool. I won't have time to go through that today, but Hootsuite, Hootsuite, is a great tool for all kinds of stuff. I use it all the time for Twitter. You can link up your Facebook page if you want to. You can just do so much with Hootsuite. I like that too.
It attracts competition social media, right?
You can set it up that way. You can follow anybody. You know, you can follow your competition and see what they're tweeting out, for sure. There's a lot of search. They basically set you up in different columns where you can set up streams of things. You can follow certain people. I've got one stream right now, even on my phone, for the hashtag RWPC, so I can see real quickly at a glance all the people that are posting with that hashtag. So you can use that tool. I use that for Twitter a lot. So Twitter is really good for connecting and sending out more information. Probably your Facebook people, not so much. There's just a culture there that people don't seem to like as much on Facebook from you. But on Twitter, I don't think you could over-post on Twitter. And you could just do a whole lot more kinds of things. You could retweet other people's stuff, and you could just post a whole lot more links, as well as some of you use it for athletic scores and things like that. So that's another conversation. But basically, Twitter, I think, still has a real good opportunity to reach out. It's a great way to connect. And one of the things that I love using it for with schools is connecting with your local media. They are desperate for stories because they have to fill this website that seems to people want to see changing all the time. They're not just dealing with tomorrow's headline. They're dealing with next hour's headline and then the next hour's headline. They are in a culture where they have to have more and more stories. And so follow, find out all of every news journalist, every anybody, especially if you're in a city where there's a, they kind of have an education beat or an education sector, the newspaper or your TV stations, radio, anybody. If they cover education, make sure you follow them. Follow them and then retweet their stuff. In other words, share their things. And then when you have a story worth noting, again, maybe it's on the blog or maybe it's a press release, whatever, send it to them. You'd be surprised that they may be hurting for a story, and all of a sudden you're thinking it's not the biggest thing in the world, but they come calling and say, hey, do you mind if we do a feature on that? Boom, that's an easy way to use Twitter. It's easier than trying to pick up the phone and say, hey, I've got a story for you, and then they connect you to three or four different people before you actually get to the right person. So Twitter is a really good tool. Video is just extremely important, and that can be obviously YouTube videos. Vimeo is another channel that's likened to YouTube. I like using both, actually. YouTube's owned by Google, so Google, if you can play with Google well, then that's advantageous for all the search engine rankings. But I don't like all the ads and all the related videos, and all the stuff that you get with YouTube sometimes is annoying. But certainly you can put things there. Vimeo is a different kind of site. It's you upload your videos to Vimeo, but I think it's a cleaner look, and so I like that better. But so you might just sit down and decide, okay, I want any, you know, I'll put up all kinds of videos on YouTube, but then reserve maybe your admissions video or maybe your head of school, more professional videos, upload those to Vimeo, and you have a little bit of both. But video is just extremely important. And I'll mention video right here as it relates to Facebook. Facebook has decided that they'd like to compete with this video sharing stuff as well. So they've asked everybody to start posting their videos directly to Facebook, whereas before we would post them to YouTube, post the link into Facebook, right? Or Vimeo and post that link into Facebook. Facebook has said, we'd like you to start putting that stuff on our channel first. And one of the ways that two ways that they reward you for doing that is, one, they actually show it to more of your people than if you post a link to YouTube. So they show it to more of the people who have liked your page. Well, that's important because we're struggling to try to get that more information out in front of them. And the other thing they give you is an optional call to action. So at the end of the video, you watch this 2-minute video, and it'll say something like, would you like to learn more? And you click the video over to your website. Like, wow, that was free. We just did a video. And so you could do all kinds of video and then use the call to action to draw someone back to your website. As I mentioned in other presentations, I say never, 99.9% of the time, it's not real advantageous to drive somebody from any social media channel to your homepage. Because your homepage, as I said, is like dropping somebody off at the front door of the mall or front door of a grocery store and say, go find whatever you're looking for. Well, it's overwhelming. It's like you got to guide people. If you want them to check out something, if you want them to be aware of your athletic program or aware of your open house coming up, drive them to a page specifically about that. Don't make them go find the information once they're there. That just doesn't make sense. You wouldn't want somebody dropping you off at the mall and saying, see if you can go find that store. I don't know where it is. Guide them right to it. Using the video component of Facebook is increasingly important. Online reviews. This is one of my favorite things to tell people to do. And I love this. It's so important to do this. There's about three primary places. There's others as well. But three places, and I'm not going to write these. They're not on the screen, so you have to hear these. But three places where you need to get reviews for your school. Three primary places and list a couple of others. Facebook is one. Facebook has recently modified where you can have a tab for reviews. And you need to make that real prominent and drive your parents to that. Most of them are on Facebook. It should be really easy for them to make a review. If I was to show you this, you would see, if you were to make a review on Facebook, you have the first thing you have to do on Facebook is you have to click how many stars. So you're going to hopefully get a lot of 5 stars. So this is what I would do. I would not ever blast this out to the whole school and say, hey, let us know what you think of us on Facebook. No, we don't want that. You have disillusioned parents over there going, yes, finally, a time to give them peace of my mind. This is where you go to your parent ambassadors, those real good ambassadors, and say, I need you to give us a 5-star review. I don't need a 4-star review. I know you may have some things to think, well, there'd be some room for improvement. I need a 5-star review from you. But besides the stars, that's not enough. If you look at your reviews, a lot of times you'll see there's a lot of people that gave us a 5-star review, and that's all they did. That's not really that valuable. I mean, it's good, but you need to have somebody to write a testimony. So they give you 5 stars, and then they actually type something out. It doesn't have to be long, maybe 100 words, just something brief and as specific as possible. Don't just say, this is a wonderful school, great teachers. That's kind of boring. Any school could get reviews like that. Have them talk about specific things, specific programs that they just love, specific results that they have achieved in their life. So go through, get those online reviews on Facebook. Just to kind of speed up a little bit, I'm going to go to greatschools.org is another place. Greatschools.org is a place that has every school, public and private, and everywhere else, has a profile for you. And there's places for reviews there. You need to make sure you've getting reviews in greatschools.org. They are, if I remember, on greatschools.org, they are anonymous. So you don't list their name. Facebook obviously would have your name associated with it. Great Schools will not have your name with it, which is okay. Some people might feel more comfortable there because they don't put their name on it. But they get an opportunity to get a review there. It's really important because when Google gives your search, if someone were to type in private schools in the search engine and Google brings it up, Great Schools is one of the top listings usually on the front page, and it'll list your school's profile on greatschools.org. Recently, about 2 years ago or so, the Today Show was doing a feature, a realtor feature, and they say, you know, they look at housing and what are some things about housing, all this kind of stuff. And I was watching this, and this lady came on, and it was kind of, they were doing a Q&A, and this mom came on and said, hey, I'm moving to the Houston area, and I want to put my kids into a great school, and I'm trying to find a house. What's the best way to figure out that? And the expert, the realtor expert said, go to greatschools.org, because that's where you find out the great schools in the area. So realtors may be the ones pointing people to that. And especially if you have people, if you live in a community, we have a lot of transient families moving in, where else are they going to find out? They don't have friends in the area. They're going to go to greatschools.org very likely and find out what people are saying. So go to greatschools.org. And then also the third one is your Google page. Make sure you have a Google page set up to where, and you have reviews there, because when Google lists you under private schools, they actually have, they'll say, you know, Fort Worth Christian School, here's your address, 35 reviews. And then it'll actually say it right there. You click it, and you can then read all the reviews. So, again, one of those things, if a family's searching for, that's what they're even looking for. So before you can have a chance to talk to them, before you have a chance to make your case, they've already decided, based on the reviews that are on there, of what they think of your school. As I was working with a school one time, I said, man, you guys have a real bullying problem at your school. And they go, oh, we don't either. I said, well, the last 4 reviews that you do. And they didn't even know the reviews were out there. They'd never looked at them. And I said, well, something's going on. It was one of those moments, very isolated case, but 4 moms jumped on the bandwagon and decided to rant on their situation, but no one else, I didn't know that, so it looks to me like, on a broad scale, you've got a bullying problem at your school. And they just said, it's just a little isolated incident. Well, it's not when it's on greatschools.org that way. So be intentional in getting reviews there. Privateschoolreview.com, I think, is another one that you could do reviews on. Let's see if there's another one. I had another one in my mind, but there's some other places that you might get reviews. But online reviews are so important to get because when you're looking at evidence, you know, showcase evidence, that's huge. Another thing about reviews real quick, those reviews are seen on greatschools.org, but there's no reason why you shouldn't capture them maybe take a picture of them, do a screenshot on your computer, and carry those over and post them on Facebook as an image. You got your screenshot. Post it as an image on Facebook and say, hey, we just got another great review. So there's some social media content that you can post. And then take those same images and put them on your website. Sprinkle them throughout the website, or you can also do it in addition to have an entire page on your site of all the reviews from around the web about what people say about you. If it's good, it's really impressive to do that. Put those reviews on the tuition schedule page. That's the sticker shock page. That's probably where you're met with the most resistance. So in admissions pages, athletic pages, if you have any reviews that mention athletics, put the review on that page, because that's what people are interested in. They see information there, but they want to know evidence. So all those images of those reviews make great, especially I just like images of that. If you can do a screenshot, it looks more authentic than you just typing out the review. You could do that, but we all have a little sense of suspicion, like, did they just make that up, or I don't know. But if you see a screenshot of something that actually exists on Google or greatschools.org or on Facebook, then it's more real. All right? Instagram and Pinterest. I just put these together because they're both visual. But these are great tools to use. Visual, visual, visual. And again, we go through this in greater detail in the visual content strategy presentation tomorrow morning. But Instagram and Pinterest are becoming essential. Instagram, because everybody's on Instagram, it seems like, and more people are. And my general sense is that Instagram is, I would say, all the young folks up to 40, 50. I like to put us in that category, too. But especially if you're talking to 30-somethings or below, large majority of them are on Instagram. And if I'm trying to fill lower grade seats in elementary and kindergarten, that's where the mom's very likely going to be. They may not even be on Facebook anymore. Or they might check it from time to time, but they're Instagramming all the time. So Instagram has got value there. Again, you can't click through each image and go to the website. But again, you can represent your school, do some really creative things. And I go through that in the visual content strategy session tomorrow morning. Pinterest is a similar kind of thing, because anybody, who does Pinterest in here? Any Pinterest users? All right, so we got some pinners around. Generally, the Pinterest demographic mirrors your demographic that you're after. Primarily, the 30, 40-year-old mom is definitely, I'm on it, so there's dads too, but generally, moms are on there, and they're pinning things that are important to them. You know, all the typical things, the recipes and the fashion and the home decor, those are the most popular things out there on Pinterest, but one of the other things that they really like to pin things are ideas for their kids. Kids are hugely important. There's a lot of times they're posting things that they see relevant. That's why they're not going to pin your tuition schedule to their board. It's not that relevant to them. They're not going to pin your athletic page. It's not relevant to them. But blog posts that show showcases stories and evidence of success be worth pinning. There's a lot of things you can do on Pinterest. But you got to make, if you have a Pinterest strategy, you also have to think about, is your website Pinterest friendly? Is there anything on your site that somebody could pin? That really transforms a lot of sites that, if you look at your site now, that's very text-heavy. There's no images there. You have to have an image to pin something. All right? You'll get this nasty little error message that says, no pinnable images. No one likes that. So if there's a story on your website, make sure it's got an image that somebody could pin over to your website. So Pinterest is another one. And then I'll finish up real quick with all this other social networking. That's just a general zone. We covered Facebook, we covered Twitter. Even Pinterest in itself is, I kind of leave it up there as a catch-all for any new things. It kind of just allows us to talk. This is all, I'll just, for time's sake, I'll just kind of say all, this is kind of what I think are the major categories. LinkedIn could be put in this category. I don't know that much value of LinkedIn. You might have some if the head of school is working with donors, or if he wants to communicate, or if you want to communicate more with moms and dads who are more at the business level, maybe things like that would be valuable to put on LinkedIn. You could certainly put LinkedIn there. But this is where This is the ones I recommend the most, and I'll just kind of go through this. This is my tier strategy. If you need to prioritize things, this is the way I would do it. And I don't know your situation, so obviously it may be different for your school. Obviously, you've got to have a real strong, dynamic website. The website needs to be responsive now. In other words, it needs to respond to these little devices. If your website is one of those that you have to stare at and pinch and zoom to try to read the text, it's not responsive. A responsive website is built in a way that when it comes up to a little small screen like this, then the text is bigger and the images show up bigger. So if your website's not responsive, then you need to fix that. Then again, I mentioned the blog and then the reviews. If you're doing nothing else, those are the things you have to do right off the bat. And I actually put reviews even above something like Facebook because you need evidence. And it takes so much effort to get those reviews. And I'll give you a stat. I found that you ask 10 people to do a review for you, one or two of them actually will do it. So that's kind of discouraging. So you have to ask people a lot. And one tip on that I tell people to do is create a calendar system, take it to your PTO, whatever you call it, and say, I need 10 people to do January. I need 3 of you to do it on greatschools.org, 3 of you to do it on Google. I need 4 of you to do Facebook reviews. Who's going to be those? And get names, put a little chart together. The next month, PTO, pull up that same chart and say, how did we do? Hold them accountable to that. They're going to have a little fun with it. You can even have fun with it. You can even say, you know, you can make a contest out of it, whatever. But you've got to hold them accountable. Send them out an email reminder. Everybody's going to forget. So just say, okay, here's the next review. Or next month, you can go and review, do your review there. But you've got to have those reviews. And again, email marketing and Facebook kind of, again, real close second tier to that first tier of things. And then I'd work on YouTube, Instagram, Twitter, and Pinterest. So that's kind of where I would fall in doing that. So we just real quickly, because we talked about strategy, we talked about the tools, implementing this, and we mentioned Hootsuite is one of the tools. I go through this a little bit more extensively in, I kind of have what I call a backpack of tools. You can find that. It's free. It's called at yourschoolmarketing.com/RenWeb. It's on that orange card right there if you need to take that with you. Same thing. You just register for that. You get that. And you also get, I have another report on there. It's called 50 Social Media Tips, where I kind of go through a lot of the common tools we mentioned and list out certain tips of things you want to do. And then also all the slides for this presentation and all the other presentations are on there. I would probably wait till after this is over with because I made a change to the presentation yesterday and had to redo it. So you might just wait to the end of the week and then go get all of your slides if you want them. But that's kind of the toolbox. As we close out, you may have some questions, but as you just connect with us on these different channels here, as I mentioned, Facebook and Twitter, where I'm most often at. I do a lot of stuff on Pinterest, so if you need some ideas and articles on that, you can do that. Any questions? I know it's time to go, but if you have any questions, you can ask.
I was wondering what your opinion is as to where we should put our blog on the website. What page?
A lot of times it's a separate page. And again, you could have, usually in a navigation, you might have someplace. Again, some people say, well, if I put blog, people don't know what that is. So you might label it as student success or Eagles in the News or whatever your mascot is, something like that, and you can use it that way. I'm going to be hanging around either in here or I might have to step out in the hallway. If you have any questions about that, let me know, and I'll thank you for coming and hope to see you in one of the other sessions later today.
Wasn't very good, and in all honesty, it was absolutely true. and it was about a particular person that's no longer at the school. So would you ever quit? Why don't you respond? Do you leave it alone?
Okay, remind me, if great schools, do they, I don't think they allow you to respond to the reviews, if I remember. Google does. Google, I mean, it's got to be very tacky.
I know, and that's why I figured you just left it alone.
Usually, so leaving alone is the better approach. On Google, if someone says something that's really wrong or slanderous or whatever, you can certainly, you want to have a nice, I'm sorry you have that experience. It's not common for most of our families, blah, blah, blah. Or you could say, we regret that that happened. You know, as you know, that that person is no longer here. Well, I mean, you can mention that. I wouldn't mention that person's name again. But,
no, of course.
But most of the time, you don't. And I even tell people,
thank you.
There's a tendency, and you see it a lot, is you get the next parent to give the review will go, I don't know what she was thinking then and there.
Right.
Because she,
that
doesn't work real well. It just sounds kind of tacky.
Yeah.
And so I would just kind of keep it very positive.
Okay.
And then the best way to deal with a negative review is to get about 4 or 5 other positive reviews.
Right,
that's what we did. Yeah, that's why you need to have that list of 10 every single month, because you're going to have people. I mean,
yeah.
I was working with a school one time, and they were doing pretty good, and then they got a real nasty review. And they just went on the list and said, hey, guys, we don't have time to wait till next month. Can you do a review now? And, and they bumped, and they got it bumped off the front page, and that was helpful.
Right.
So.
And so the other thing that we do that we found has been very, we have a very high population of Indian families.
Okay.
And so
where are you?
Burlington, Massachusetts, which is, I think, on the top 5 or 4 highest population of Indian families in the country.
Okay.
So their word of mouth is incredible.
Yeah.
I mean, more,
mm-hmm.
I would say that our enrollment comes probably 80% from Indian families. It really is that strong. Like, some will say, oh, my co-worker in the office told me that this is a great school. And it's like their word is gold.
Yeah.
It's just amazing to me. But one other thing that we've done is if you refer a family, we give a $500 credit towards tuition, up to $1,000. So is there anything else that you would recommend as far as some kind of an incentive? Or do you find that doesn't...
I mean, I usually don't recommend that.
Okay.
But some people do. If
we
it works,
limit it at 1,000.
Yeah,
so
if you limit it, that's fine.
Referrals per year.
That's why if you go to your ambassador families, a lot of times you don't even have to do that because they'll want to do that.
Right.
So if you can get enough of them going, you don't even have to...
So I have to look and see.
If you have enough. If you have enough good families to do that.
We just have a lot. Because of the Indian culture, a lot of them are here on visa, so they're very transient.
Yeah.
So sometimes they're here for a year, sometimes their contract ends mid-year.
Right.
So that's the only downside to to that.
Because they kind of move in. But their word of mouth kind of helps recruit the next family to
fill
the seats.
It does. So.
Well, that's interesting. But, I mean, it's...
Okay.
You definitely want to consider that. I mean, they're a real strong community, and to make sure you. I mean, I would, if I were just off the top of my head thinking, if you knew that about them, I would definitely have kind of a liaison to that community somehow, or if they all get together for something, or invite them to get together.
There's a temple that is actually right on the corner from my house.
Yeah.
That I mean. Gym, the parking lot, when it's there.
Yeah.
Their service.
But if you could get them, you know, where you could kind of make sure you're, in other words, you're kind of their liaison. What issues do you have? I mean, if they're a transient family, if they're, we want to help your kids have a good transition. We know, just want to help. And so you're just offering more help
than
that.
I do that interpersonally when I meet with them, because if they tell me they're new, then I usually have a list of area pediatricians that are the most popular in the school.
Good.
I have a list of all the apartment buildings in the area that a lot of our families come from.
Right.
So that way, because a lot of the wives don't drive yet, or some don't drive at all.
Are they coming internationally or within the... Okay, so this is awesome. So that's a big deal. I mean,
a lot
if you're
coming
brand new,
not knowing English.
English. So that's a big deal.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yes, ma'am.
Yeah.
Sure.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Our biggest problem is we're very busy. There's a lot to do. Okay. Our biggest problem is
that I can't
figure out how to change it. And I put in my email address, which I am the admin for
the business owner for the Google page.
I can do a Google page, so that's the thing. So I don't know, to be honest with you, there was a gentleman who set up our website and he did a really poor job.
Mm-hmm.
But he's the one who set up our Google account. And as soon as we fired him, he showed up.
Situation.
I just don't know how to
change. Yeah, gosh. The thing. Yeah, it's a very complex situation. I mean, not even to that extent, but I've had other schools who just ended up having two listings and they didn't know why, because one was the official listing and one was somebody created one long time ago.
Right.
And that's where all the reviews were, but it's not the official one, and you know.
See, okay, so
and we eventually, it took a long time, but eventually got it to where we merged them together.
So, this is what should be first. I just type in, where are they okay? And so, I'm like, I don't know. We have no reviews.
So you don't have reviews yet.
But I don't even want people to put reviews on here, because I'm not
at
school.
At least, could you create a... If you went down and created a new Google page.
That's what I was just trying to do.
If you were creating a new one.
It's not showing up. I just wondered if it would show up.
It's going to take some time, from my experience, to do that. But if you got to the point where you could have two pages, and it's going to be a process, but
yeah.
You create the other page, and then eventually you go to Google and say, we'd like to. I wish I could explain it, but it's really a process. The best process. Oh.